The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, for some of you, that may have been a little bit of a different kind of experience, is to actually listen to the thoughts. But the comment we had earlier about how thoughts and speech are essentially the same is true. We have inner speech, and it's interesting to see what we're saying. Is it just a lot of commentary, a lot of direct declarative statements about how things are? Is it commands of what we should do? Is it actual questions? Are there any questions there? So we thought we'd take a few minutes and see if anyone had any comments about anything that they learned or that they want to share. Did you have any questions? I don't mean now, I meant in your meditation. Beverly. Oh, you're muted.
Oh, thank you. So it was kind of a fuzzy mess because I was falling asleep. So I thought, you're not really having any thoughts. And then I realized, no, I am having one. It's something kind of like, why can't I stay awake? Which is a question.
There you go. Why can't I stay awake?
Maybe I'll offer just something. Kim, I was playing around with what happens if I ask a question, like what is this? What is this? And I found that it was helping me to connect a little bit with the breath. As the mind was getting a little drifty, sometimes just to ask that question, what is this, helped me to connect again. So nice. I'll just share that.
Worry.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I was actually quite surprised that I don't, like, my mind is very much full of statements. It's so confident, and most of them are like self-criticism, right? That it's so much confidence, no questioning there. That was very surprising to notice. Like, why are you so hard on me?
Yeah, if somebody else were saying all those things, you might not put up with it so easily sometimes. Yeah, that's a nice observation. We don't always know what we're listening to all day. Okay. Dawn.
Something, I don't remember exactly what your instruction was, but it really made obvious to me the different layers of thoughts that I have, and how, there was this very quiet spot, but there was still, without any thought, but there was still this little background, and I call it my teacher. Mm-hmm. But it's just back there quietly observing, but I catch like a little bit of commentary as well and instruction going on.
Mm-hmm.
Not questioning, but more guidance.
Uh-huh.
So that nice. Became very obvious.
Nice. And that can be skillful. I mean, maybe one lesson is that actually not all thought is totally unskillful. I mean, when you just sit down to meditating, you're still kind of in the regular consciousness world. It's not like everything's going to just go away and whatever. And there are voices of guidance or voices of encouragement, or like Diana offered a skillful question, what is this? So we don't need to see our thinking mind or our cognitive mind as just the total enemy. Like, as soon as I sit down, I've got to just get rid of that. That in itself just adds more aversion to the mind. So, this could be a whole topic in and of itself, but since we're talking about inquiry and investigation, that is a little bit more active engagement, and it can, at the beginning at least, be cognitive. There's also ways to inquire that don't have any words. You can just kind of aim yourself at something. But anyway, this was just a little exploration. I hope it maybe piques your interest into seeing what your mind is doing and how it is that you're engaging with experience. I think everyone does have questions in some way, whether they're explicit or not, and it's not better if they're explicit. So starting to see how your mind is positioning itself and asking things is useful. Okay. So I think Diana then.
Yes, I have an unmute button here somewhere. Yeah, so I just wanted to talk a little bit more about questions. And I'll be using this kind of questioning and inquiry kind of like interchangeably, and maybe in the word investigation. But this could be something for you to consider. What are the differences between questioning, inquiry, and investigation? As I kind of use these different words a little bit interchangeably, but maybe for you, there's a little bit of a difference. And one thing that I'll say is this inquiry that we're pointing to isn't the same as speculating. It isn't the same as trying to figure it out or study for exams or, you know, that's a certain type of approach, you know, where that more has this focus on you got to get the right answer, you know, something like that. There has to be a, you know, even this idea that, you know, there's a very specific outcome that has to arise. Whereas what we're pointing to is more just kind of the opening to questions. And here's a sutta passage from Majjhima Nikaya 58. And there's just this little passage where this person goes up to the Buddha and some of you may know this and some of you may not, that actually debate was a common thing at the time of the Buddha. And so there's a number of different philosophies, philosophers, and they would debate. This was a common thing. And so some people would want to go debate the Buddha. And if, you know, of course, because they're preserved in Buddhist teachings, the Buddha always wins these debates, right? But so somebody says this, goes up to the Buddha and says, there are clever aristocrats, Brahmins, householders, or ascetics who come to see you with a question already planned. So, and there's lots of stories about this. So people like want to trick the Buddha. So they say, oh, I'm going to ask him this question and he's not going to get the answer. This person is saying there's aristocrats, Brahmins, householders, and ascetics. So just saying all kinds of people are coming to the Buddha with a question already planned. And then this person asks the Buddha, do you think beforehand that if they ask you like this, you'll answer like that? Or does the answer just appear to you on the spot? So like, are you planning these things or do you have it all figured out? And then the Buddha replies, when people come to see me with a question already planned, the answer just appears to me on the spot. Because I have clearly comprehended the Dharma, the answer just appears on the spot. So this idea that, you know, getting in touch with the Dharma is a way in which the answers can arise. And maybe in this course, we'll be unpacking what does that mean to be in touch with the Dharma or to be comprehending the Dharma or something like this. So one way is I kind of was playing around with and that I shared with in that guided meditation is that to investigate, to have an inquiry is a type of, we might use this word intimacy with our experience. It's a way in which we can kind of like, you know, connect with what's happening, like touching and connecting with the way of experience and bringing our attention, our mindfulness close to the object. So we might ask, this investigation could be a way of being with our experience. We're asking, what is here? Or what is this experience? Or what actually is going on? That could be one way in which we might use inquiry or investigation as part of our practice to help us connect with what's happening. And as some of you mentioned earlier, that's this kind of bringing the spirit of inquiry or investigation brings some energy, some vitality, some dynamism for to the moment, as opposed to being kind of like numb and closed off. Having this questioning is a way in which we're kind of engaged and that we are connecting to our experience. Because sometimes we might have the idea that if a good meditation is to be in this kind of soft, cottony space where things are a little bit vague or not quite so clear. Uh-oh, it's telling me my connection is unstable. Have you heard me? Can you get a thumbs up if you can hear me now? Nope. No thumbs up.
I think we're getting most of it, although I think, yeah, we only missed a little bit. It's good.
Okay, hopefully, let's see here what my internet is doing. Oh, it's showing me that it has full bars. Maybe I'll speak a little slower so that less words get mixed in between. I was saying that sometimes we think that meditation is to be in a soft, kind of cottony, maybe a little bit of dullness, but instead there can be a brightness which comes with a connection. So investigation inquiry is a way that counteracts any like inertia or passivity or maybe even trivializing that might be happening in our practice. And it also supports a sense of experimentation, of play. So a way in which that we can have some vitality, some liveliness in our practice. Not just for the sense of livelihood, but
Diana, now you are starting to cut off a bit. Maybe you could turn off your video.
Oh, great idea. Thank you, Kim. Hopefully this will work out better. Okay. So I was saying that to have this inquiry or investigation, it is a way that it can bring some energy to our practice, and also which can counteract inertia or passivity or trivializing, and also supports a sense of play and experimentation. So in a way, there's a sense of vitality and maybe even a little bit of delight that comes with practice, with meditation practice, as opposed to kind of a dull disconnection, which sometimes can happen with a meditation practice. But that being said, if we're asking bold questions, really big, bold questions, it might create some restlessness. There might be a reason why we haven't asked bold questions before. So is there a way that we can allow that restlessness to be there? If it feels like it's skillful, this recognition that restlessness is the last fetter to let go before complete awakening. And maybe a little bit of restlessness is a way that we can harness that energy to support our practice. So can we be okay with it? And plus recognize when it slips into something that's not helpful. So this is part of the art of practice, is to recognize when this is helpful or isn't helpful. And having questions or having inquiry requires that we have to give up some assumptions. And that can be uncomfortable. It can be uncomfortable to give up some assumptions. You know, maybe assumptions we don't even know that we have. So Socrates said that unexamined life is not worth living, And then more recently, somebody said, yeah, but remember, the examined life is no bed of roses either. So this recognition that, you know, to be have inquiry and questions is to engage with our life, all the messiness of it and the beauty of it and the things that aren't answered. Or, and so to have to question is also a certain expression of freedom, a manifestation, if you will, of freedom. That is, we're not locked in or stuck with this blind grip of what's happening. We're not completely lost in it. But instead, we're asserting some kind of freedom to dare to question. If you think about, right, if you can't even question, that's a complete loss of freedom. And the Buddha said that he had some really important questions that before he was awakened that kind of helped launch him onto his spiritual practice, his search for the Dharma. And kind of here's a little excerpt. He says, before my enlightenment, while I was still only an unenlightened bodhisattva, I asked myself, why, being myself subject to aging, sickness, death, sorrow, and defilement, why do I seek what is also subject to aging, sickness, death, sorrow, and defilement? So he's asking the question, well, the human condition, this aging, sickness, death, sorrow, and he's using this word defilement, but, you know, having not complete freedom. Why am I seeking, you know, just better conditions of this? Why don't I seek something that isn't? So then he says, suppose that I seek the unaging, the unailing, the deathless, the sorrowless, and undefiled, the supreme security from bondage, nibbana. So with this question, he left the palace, is how the story is, and started the quest that led to his awakening. So this question here, right, is a big, bold question that really launched him on his practice, on his quest. Maybe that's the word I'm looking for. So maybe I'll end with this, that as Chris said earlier, kind of like this, or, and I think, I don't remember exactly who it was that said this, my apologies, but this idea of to question and to be open to question also requires being embodied, knowing what's, you know, being experiencing the body, as opposed to being solely in the head. I'm using the head to kind of represent, you know, the more the analytical way of thinking about things. And to be sure, there is a place for using the mind and thinking in practice, but it doesn't have to be at the exclusion of being in the body. And this is also in contrast to expecting all the answers to arise from outside of yourself. But we know ourselves best, and it's part of trusting ourselves. And part of this is, we can feel into the body and see how we are reacting to a situation that can help guide us and how we can respond in line with the Dharma. So I'd like to lead us in a little practice here. So this will be really short, and I'm going to, we'll settle just for a little bit, then I'll drop in something, and then Kim will drop in something. So for now, just settle into sensations of the body. Noticing how the body feels. Maybe noticing the pressure of the chair or cushion against the body. What does it feel like to be in this posture right now? To sit and know you're sitting. Nothing in particular needs to be happening. We're just connecting with the body, settling in. So I'll read this passage from the sutta. Suppose there were a pit of glowing coals deeper than a person's height, full of glowing coals that neither flamed nor smoked. Then a person would come along, a person who wants to live and doesn't want to die, who wants to be happy and recoils from pain. Then two strong people would grab this person by the arms and drag them toward the pit of glowing coals. What do you think? Wouldn't that person writhe and struggle to and fro? Yes, venerable sir. Why is that? For that person knows if I fall in that pit of glowing coals, that would result in death or a deadly pain. Maybe just sense into the body, like hearing these words. How does this feel?
And now I will offer a different reading, also to be taken in and felt in the body. A meditator enters upon and abides in the second jhana, which has self-confidence and singleness of mind, with rapture and pleasure born of concentration. He makes the rapture and pleasure born of concentration drench, steep, fill, and pervade this body. Just as though there were a lake whose waters welled up from below, and it had no inflow from east, west, north, or south, and would not be replenished from time to time by showers of rain, then the cool fount of water welling up in the lake would make the cool water drench, steep, fill, and pervade the lake, so that there would be no part of the whole lake unpervaded by cool water. So too, a meditator makes the rapture and pleasure born of concentration drench, steep, fill, and pervade this body, so that there is no part of the whole body unpervaded by the rapture and pleasure born of concentration. So maybe breathing deeply into those images and resting with that just for a few minutes. So those were two quite contrasting and vivid images. And the exercise was really to see how words land in the body, how these teachings are full of words like this, images like this. And so we now have a few minutes for any comments on how that was for you or any questions on today's material. Chris, is your hand up? I can't quite tell. No, okay. Oh, Claire.
Yeah, I just had a practical question that maybe you're going to get to this, but like in the next week, like how, do you have any tips of how to like, in a practical sense, work with the inquiry that we've been talking about?
Yeah, we'll have more on that. Do you want to say anything, Diana?
I was hoping that you were going to say something, Kim. Yeah, we do, Claire. I'll be sending out an email after this too with some ideas and some.
Thank you.
I guess I can say that one thing we would like explicitly for you to do is just what we did in that exercise, is to consider working with the impact of language in the body. So the way even things like listening to the news or reading something all the time, actually the things we take into our mind impact the body in various ways. So, but we may not be aware of that if we're just in our head and focusing on what we're doing next. So this can be a powerful part of practice, is to start feeling what we're taking in the body.
And for some of you, this will be old hat. This is be like how you navigate the world. And for some of you, this will be maybe a little bit different. So to kind of like just noticing the bodily experience of some of this. Phyllis.
So I found it really interesting that as we were doing the guided meditation with Kim, the inquiry into what the quality of the mind was like led to this very pleasant stability of mind, which then translated into this very, 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 very pleasant ease that just sort of washed over the mind. And just there's this very deep felt sense of relaxation. And even to the point of just the ability to sort of really feel warm hearted. And then it was also interesting to note that then the comparing mind then thought, oh, well, how come this doesn't work in metta? So that was my experience.
That's great. But you called it your comparing mind. Why can't you just say, and then the inquiry arose, oh, why doesn't this happen in metta? Why it, instead, you know, and have that just be a question.
I do think that there was a flavor because in our breakout room, there was a I think it was Bess, said that she had been working with this question of what am I missing? And I really liked that. And that just sort of kind of seemed to like percolate into the experience a little bit of what am I missing?
Nice. What am I missing? Thank you for this. Lee.
Oh, so, sorry, because my iPad doesn't respond very fast. One of the questions, is it skillful during meditation to influence, let's say, to do some sort of self-talk, you know, to calm one's mind, to develop some sort of self some self-soothing phrases, to use some self-soothing phrases during meditation? Or is it better just to be aware of one's thoughts, whether they are angry thoughts or whatever?
Kim, do you want to answer?
I think the overall question is to, and when we're considering whether things are working well, is whether suffering is being reduced or not in some way. So there are times when it's very skillful to use self-soothing phrases or, you know, somebody said earlier they had kind of coaching or guiding kinds of phrases. And those can be very skillful. And then at sometimes we'll feel like using that is agitating the mind. It could be settling down, but we're busy trying to do things to it. So that's one way that we can kind of navigate. Diana might have something to add.
Yep, I think that I appreciate very much what you said, Kim. And the way that I practice is not necessarily what's best for everybody. So I will offer that I'm often kind of feeling into what's needed here to support the mind settling down, the heart opening, and to see more clearly, to feel that. So sometimes it's helpful to bring, if I'm really agitated, to bring some questions and maybe something to help support. But just like Kim said, if the mind is already kind of quiet or not agitated or restless, then just to allow it to go on. So for me, I like to have different tools in my toolkit, and then I use them. But you know, the risk then is that you just are trying all these different tools and you never really settle down. So I'll say this is another art of practice. And I also want to say that some teachers will say, you know, just choose one way and stay with that way for quite some time until you learn all the advantages and disadvantages and how it works and doesn't work, and just stay. So there's these two different ways to approach it. And I think maybe it's a little bit of our personalities or our styles that how we work with it. So.
Thank you.
Okay, well, we're getting close to the end. That I feel like that went pretty fast, but it has been almost 2 hours. And so we'll be sending an email, as Diana hinted at earlier, that has some suggested readings, just some suttas, relatively short. And also some kind of questions or exercises that you can do. So one of them would be the look at the role in your life of questions in practice and also in regular life, not that they're separate. So see, you know, maybe you haven't really focused on whether on this thing of questions and inquiry, and just see where it comes up. You know, where do you usually use it, where not, etc. And then also continuing to work with the impact of language in the body. Did I see a chat go by there? Can I share a list of the general topics? Well, as Diana said, the first two are going to be focused on methods. And so since next week we'll have coming up, we'll look at looking at suttas and, you know, how we can use the suttas in our practice. And if you're thinking, oh no, I don't like the suttas, don't worry. There's something for everyone in that session. Or if you love the suttas, you'll probably find something new. And then we'll go through some areas of practice, as Diana said. So broadly speaking, sila, samadhi, panya kind of areas of practice, and apply these two techniques that we've used, that we've come up with. So I hope that helps a bit. I'll leave it a little open because Diana, I might want to, you know, make some changes now and then. What do you think, Diana?
Yeah, and awakening too. We're going to talk about awakening.
Yeah, you have to stay all the way to the end for that. But you will get there. Okay, so, in the interest of time, we should let you go. But if you have any last comments, I guess Diana and I will be here for another moment. But, Chris. I had the feeling it was one more thing.
Yeah, I've never been a sutta type of guy, but you've given me the excitement about suttas. And the two suttas that she referenced, Kim, what were the numbers of them?
Two suttas.
Majjhima Nikaya 2, you said?
Oh, MN2 and SN1.1.
Okay, those great. Thank you very much.
Talk. Yeah.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. See you next week.
You can unmute yourself if you'd like and
say goodbye.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Be well. Thank you.